Welcome to the Anderson Business Advisors Podcast, the nationally recognized preferred provider for asset protection and tax planning in the nation. This show is for real estate investors looking to protect their assets, save on taxes, and build their wealth with Clint Coons. Clint is an attorney, author, avid real estate investor, and featured instructor at Anderson's tax and asset protection events held throughout the country. Enjoy the show.
Welcome, everyone. Hi, it's Clint Coons here with Anderson Business Advisors, and we're here with our another weekly podcast. And in this episode, we're going to be talking about title insurance. Now, many people, you know, when we think about title insurance, it's not high on our radar screen. We don't see it as being that important, but let me tell you, it is important. If you've watched some of my YouTube videos or if you've read part of my blog, I've discussed the importance of having a title policy because if you make a mistake when you're transferring real estate, you can blow it. And this actually happened to one of our clients where he transferred real estate from his name into an LLC. And when he later sold it, escrow held out $130,000 because of a pre-existing lien on that property that predated his ownership. Now, he had title insurance, and when he went to make his claim against the policy, they denied him. Now, he made some mistakes along the way because he didn't have the information, didn't have the proper policy in place to protect him. And so I thought, you know, we're all real estate investors here. This is part of real estate investing, knowing what you need to do to ensure that your assets are protected, not only with LLCs, but also from the standpoint of insurance. So who better than to bring on to the podcast an expert in this field, an attorney, the CEO of Texas National Title, Laitra Zoll, and she is going to walk us through all of the important aspects of title insurance. She's got a tremendous background on this, and she's an attorney and COO to boot. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to you, Laitra. How are you doing?
Good, Clint. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks. Now, I know people that are listening, they're going to want to know a little bit about, you know, where you got to where you are today, how you got to where you are today, and what exactly you do with Texas National Title.
Absolutely. So after law school, I came back to the real estate community. I'd been in it for years before, and I've worked in basically every single department in the title insurance business, which hopefully means I have a fair idea of what's going on. On a day-to-day basis, what I'm doing is working with our clients and also working with the real estate agents in our community and investors to help them navigate the transaction. There are a lot of times where people will find themselves with challenging questions, situations they haven't dealt with before, and part of my job with Texas National Title is to answer those questions for the parties to the best of our ability and get them through to closing.
Wow. You know, what you do is, to me, this little obscure area of the law that really requires some specialized knowledge that, you know, most attorneys, they probably don't even understand what it is you do or what goes on. Would you agree with that?
I would. It's definitely a small piece of the pie, and it's something in real estate as a whole. Title insurance is often a really teeny tiny piece of it, but it's something that can go very wrong if not processed properly. And sometimes parties find out later that they wish they'd done a little bit different during the transaction.
Oh, now that's a perfect segue. So why don't you tell us some of the mistakes that you've come across that people make when it comes to title insurance?
So some of the mistakes that we're seeing lately, I would say the first thing is something good to talk about that you mentioned earlier. We see a lot of people take title individually in their own names because it's easier to get to closing that way. It's the fastest route to it, and they're not quite prepared yet. They haven't gone out and created their LLC. And after they take title to the property, they're often coming back to us and asking us to prepare warranty deeds from their individual name into their new entity. And in many cases, they're not realizing that may change the coverage under their policy. And in some cases, it may even mean they are not insured anymore. And so I think in our state, there is an important endorsement that's available to investors. It's called the additional insured endorsement. There's a moderate fee to basically transfer or change the name on that insurance policy from the individual into their LLC. It basically extends the coverage to them.
Okay, so with that issue right there, then what I'm hearing is if I want to put the policy or transfer my property into a limited liability company, then I need to get this endorsement because I was always in the impression that if you just, you know, sign a warranty deed and you transfer it in, that you don't really need to do anything else. But what I'm hearing is that it's important that you contact, you know, someone like yourself and inquire as to, are there other endorsements there that are available?
I think that's definitely what happens. You know, with title insurance, Texas is one of the only states that's highly regulated under a different organization called the Texas Department of Insurance. Most of the other states are American Land Title Association states. And so investors that work across the country are much more versed in ALTA endorsements, ALTA policies. Then they come to Texas, they don't know that the coverage is available to them. They don't know what to ask for. And so I think anytime somebody is transferring title, particularly in Texas, it's really important for them to get this extra endorsement.
So is that not covered under an ALTA policy? That endorsement's not typically not available?
You know, I don't know because we're not an ALTA state, so I can't issue an ALTA policy.
Mm-hmm. All right. So when you acquire this, I mean, if a lender saw that initially, so if I came to you and I'm buying a house and I'm getting a traditional mortgage for it, I wouldn't want to pick this up on the front end, would I? Because wouldn't that clue the lender into the fact that I plan to move this into an entity?
It would clue them into that. The lenders are kind of split. So half and half would care about it. Half and, you know, the other half would probably have an issue with it. It depends entirely on how you're structuring the loan. So if you're structuring the loan as an investment property, many of them are okay with it. In some cases, we have lenders coming to us saying, we know our borrower is going to deed out after closing. Isn't there something he should be getting? It just depends entirely on what kind of lender you're working with. And certainly the private financing, the hard money lenders, they tend to be way more open to it.
Okay. So when you're doing this, then if you're concerned about it, you can, as I understand, you can pick it up later. You don't have to get it at the outset. You can come back and do that.
Correct. Yes. So for the parties that don't get it at closing, they come back to ask for preparation of a warranty deed. We prepare that and we offer it to them at that time also.
You know, just on that deed aspect, could you maybe speak to how important proper deed preparation is? Because I've run into so many investors, they look at that as something anyone can do, and they don't realize, I think, that an attorney or someone specialized should be preparing it.
I definitely agree with you. So we have a lot of people that kind of want to do the DIY approach to legal documents, but if a legal document fails for a particular reason, then at least in our state, it completely fails to give any kind of notice. And I see them with defects in the grantor name, so it wouldn't tie together who's the new seller and who's the new buyer. And I see a lot of legal description errors as well. So with the legal description, if you don't include all of the necessary information when that warranty deed is recorded, it's not going to post properly so that anyone coming behind you to do that research would not find it, which actually would allow the seller to resell the property to somebody else if they were so inclined. Doesn't mean the seller does it without liability, but it means that you've created a title mess for yourself.
Yeah, and that's what I often tell people when they look at the deed of trust and they pull the description from the deed of trust, that's not always accurate. Is that a fair statement that you should always look to the actual deed itself and know where you're pulling the information?
You know, I think you need to look to the deed itself. And frankly, if you're going to be spending the money on investment properties, you really ought to be working with a title company that can do a policy for you. We're the ones that are going to ensure the legal description, and we can provide the legal description to say this is exactly what you should be using. It's really common for people to miss something as simple as a plat reference, which in our state is incredibly important because that's a major part of the index.
Okay, so moving on, then we're talking about LLCs, but one other aspect I want to tie this down with, series limited liability company. So for those people that are listening in that live in Texas, you know, or a state that offers series LLCs, you know, what does it do for title? Because I've always had this issue. I've told my clients this, and when you deed property or you transfer property into a series, there's two ways you can do it. You can just deed it directly into the name of the series, or you put a parenthetical notation in the bottom of the deed itself stating that this property is to be held by Series A, for example. And so you're actually deeding it to the parent LLC with that notation in the bottom of the deed. With Texas National Title, what is your preference? How would you recommend someone do this?
What I'm seeing happen most commonly is that we're deeding all the way into the named series. So, you know, 1223 Main Street, Series A, Series B, whatever it is, because that is what gets recorded in the real property records. That's what will affect your taxing authorities. That's what affects what shows up in MLS when agents start their marketing. That's generally what gets pulled into the contracts. And so that kind of tracks all the way through, making it separate and distinct from the main entity.
So Texas National Title, you all don't have an issue then with issuing a policy to an individual series?
Correct.
Okay, that's good. Because I know for a while there, it was hard to find a title company that would issue a policy because there was no way for them to independently verify the existence, as I understood it, of that particular series that they were transferring it into.
You know, I think when series LLCs first came out, it was something that they're relatively new in Texas. And so it's not something that a lot of people had a really good handle on. And for the first couple of years, there was definitely some moving back and forth about what is it and what do we require. But I'd say over the last year or so, I'm finding that the parties that have created them with the help of counsel usually have really good, solid documents that control the company as well as give adequate naming descriptions. So we're allowed to vest in the individual series.
All right. That's great. Just one other thing off this subject matter. Have you ever seen a series, an individual series or called it a cell, come under attack? And if you have, do you know how it played out?
You know, I haven't. It's such a new creation in Texas that we just don't have a ton of litigation on it.
Yeah, that's been my experience as well. Okay, great. Well, so you said there are some other issues as well, mistakes that real estate investors make with title. And before we started this, you were talking about loans when people are loaning money. Maybe expand upon that a little bit.
Absolutely. So one of the things that we're seeing here recently are people that want to start to get into the individual financing arena, and they're loaning their own money to other investors that are going to purchase, rehab, do some renovations to a property, then resell it. And what I'm finding is that a surprising number of these folks are going to do it or try to do it without the benefit of title insurance. And I think that's an incredibly dangerous position for them to be in, because the title insurance, to get to the insurance part, you get what's called the title commitment. And the title commitment is where we as a company publish from our research what we found as far as who is the owner of the property and what other prior existing liens might be out there. And if you're going to loan money to somebody on a piece of property, you definitely want to know that you're transacting with the right person and that there's not another lien out there that could wipe out your lien. The way it works in Texas is if a superior lien holder forecloses, it wipes out all inferior liens if there's no money left over after the foreclosure sale. And so I think it's really important for people that are going to be on the loaning side to make sure they're dealing with the right people and that they're going to get a policy that preserves or protects their lien priority.
Yeah, and I know there's a lot of hard money lenders or just private money lenders, and they're not aware of this. And so I imagine that's going to be a specific type of policy, and they need to know the right questions to ask. And so we're going to take a short little break here, and then we come back. Let's address that aspect of it.
Okay.
Attention all real estate investors, business owners, stock traders, and anyone looking to get out of the rat race for good. We all know time is money, but did you know there's a wealth of resources on how to make more money, keep more money, and protect what you've earned all for free online? Anderson Business Advisors YouTube channel offers free resources on asset protection and tax reduction from lawyers and CPAs designed to help you keep more money in your pocket. To learn how to limit your liability, protect what you've earned, and minimize your tax burden all for free, subscribe to Anderson Business Advisors on YouTube today.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back. It's Clint Kuhns here with Anderson Business Advisors weekly podcast. And we are speaking with Leitra Zoll of Texas National Title. And right before the break, we were talking about loaning money on real estate and how important title insurance is, or getting a title endorsement policy when you're making that loan to perfect your interest. So if somebody's going to loan money to another individual, and you were talking about this, what should they be asking for? If they're going to come to you, because they should obviously come to you and ask you to help them accomplish this, what could you do for them?
So the most important thing for them is to make sure that you've got a quality escrow company that's going to do all of the data research. There are certain companies in Texas, we have a couple different ways that we can do our research. We can use what's called a thin plant. And with the thin plant, you're not getting all of the data that you could possibly get. Or we've got a full plant. And with our situation, we've got individual examiners that go back and they search the tract books. They do all the research to get to a point where we're comfortable issuing a title policy. And even as an individual investor, I think it's important that you get a title policy, because that's where the rubber meets the road if your lien later is having some issues with enforcement. So one of the arguments against a lien would be that it was an invalid lien, not recorded properly, or maybe you didn't have the right people sign on your lien instruments. That's where the title insurance comes in to help you defend that position. And it's actually really inexpensive in a purchase transaction. for a lien holder policy to be issued with an owner's title policy in Texas at the same time. It's called simultaneous issue. It's an extra $100 plus whatever endorsements the lender requires. And I see investors walk away from requiring those lender policies all the time because they're private money investors and they don't know to ask for it. I think it's really important that they do.
All right. So if I was going to loan money and against another piece of real estate, I would come to your office. What would you guys prepare for me? You'd want to see the promissory note, I assume, right?
Yeah. So we're going to issue what's called a title commitment. And the title commitment is our report or our commitment to issue the policy. And it tells you, this is the data that we've found. This is how we're willing to insure the transaction with this person signing on this legal description subject to these liens or other encumbrances. So that title commitment report is what says, what covers how we're going to issue that policy. On the investor side, on a purchase transaction, you want to be sure that we're going to pay off all the existing debts and we're going to get a good deed from the seller. And that is Title 101. That's what we do all day long. And so that's an important piece for them. If you've got somebody that is going to loan money on a piece of property that is already owned by the LLC or by the entity they're going to loan the money to, most important thing in Texas is that you make sure it's not their homestead, because homestead in Texas is very much protected. There are only a couple of types of liens that are permitted on it. And I would just advise staying away from that on the investor side.
Yeah. And I guess on following that out, if you were going to loan against property in an LLC, before you issued a title commitment, would you check to make sure that LLC has not been revoked, it's still in good standing, that the person who signs for it has the apparent authority at least to sign?
Very good question. So our company does a pretty diligent search. We search the Secretary of State to make sure that they are formed and that they're in good standing with the Secretary of State. If it's an LLC or a corporation, we also search the comptroller's website to make sure that they're current on their taxes and that they haven't forfeited their existence for either one of those entities. We also then require a copy of all of their documents to show sign-in authority. And that's a challenge for people because, first of all, not many of them have gone out and spent the time with an attorney to create them, or at least a good portion of them haven't. Mm-hmm. And then every different type of entity can have a different set of governing docs, and they're all named something different. And so our closing teams are often having to give a laundry list of things that we might accept. But what we're looking for is the agreement that mandates how the company is operated, who is responsible for management of that company, what their powers are, whether they can act all the time on their own or if they have to have additional member consent, and then what limitations might be on that power. So if we can get a copy of the agreement of the operating documents for the company, we track it all the way down to the individuals that can sign. So if we've got a limited partnership that's managed by an LLC that's managed by another LLC, I need all those docs. But once we get them, we put together an approved signature of authority for the parties so that they know we've done our research.
All right. So let's assume that I am buying a property in the name of my LLC. And this is the way it's structured. We have a Texas LLC that is member managed, and it's member managed by a Wyoming LLC, so an out-of-state LLC. And the manager of the Wyoming LLC is Clint. So I'm looking to buy this property in the Texas LLC. So it's Texas LLC, Wyoming LLC, and then Clint's down there as the owner and manager of that. When you look at the Texas Secretary of State's website, what you're going to see when you look at that Texas LLC is you're going to see all the information for the Wyoming LLC, being that it's the member manager. And then when you look at Wyoming, you're not going to see any information because Wyoming doesn't publish any information other than the name and the RA. Is that going to create a problem for you if somebody gives you, you know, all the LLC operating agreements are all put together and it shows how that whole process there? Of, you know, I own the Wyoming, my name would be listed as a member, I'd be listed as the manager, and then on the Texas LLC it would show that my Wyoming LLC is the member manager of it. And quite possibly I'm also listed as the president because the LLC appointed officers.
So for us, that's not an issue. We need to make sure that the entity going into title or coming out of title is registered with Texas and in good standing. But we don't then continue to search the good standing portion or the out-of-state registries for the interior companies, because for us, that's not really the company going into or coming out of title. So on that type of, on that example, I'm going to require the LLC docs for the Texas entity and the search for the Secretary of State and the search for the comptroller. And then I'm just going to need to see the documents for any interior companies. So for the LLC out of Wyoming, I'd want to see their company agreement or regulations or operating agreement. And once I get to where it shows that Clint can sign individually without any input from anybody else, then that's where we would stop with our research.
Now, for those individual listeners that are on here that live in Texas, and I know many of them do, you said something there that I don't think most people would pick up on. You said company agreement, if I heard you correctly.
Correct.
Now, that is a Texas-specific term. How often do you find LLC operating agreements that are brought to your office that do not refer to them as company agreements, but refer to them as operating agreements?
Oh, probably half the time. Everybody calls it something different. We see company agreement, company regulations, operating agreement, LLC agreement. People call them all different things. And what we're really looking for is the authority and what limitations there might be on it.
All right. So you're going to let that one slide, even though in Texas they're supposed to be called company agreements.
Yes. All
right. I often wondered if that would throw off the title. I mean, it's one of the things I often tell people when I look at an operating agreement. It's like either you did it yourself or you use some entity mill out of some state because they don't know what they're doing. They shouldn't be called an operating agreement.
Yeah.
That's great. Well, you know, on a different matter, land trusts. Are you familiar with those?
I am.
Okay. So if somebody's going to buy property in a land trust, or actually better, we'll start first with this. I'm going to transfer real estate that I own into a land trust. Do I have to do anything different with that as far as policies are concerned?
Not as far as a title insurance policy is concerned, no.
Okay. Because you look at it as a grantor trust, I can just deed it in and I don't need that other endorsement that you needed with the LLC. I asked you a tough one here.
Yeah, that one I probably have to research before you keep it in your podcast.
No, it's all right. You know, if you're not sure about it, that's great because it's something that, you know, people should know that because we have a lot of individuals that use land trust. And I'm sure that, you know, if someone's listening to this podcast and they invest in Texas, I hope they're going to call you and have you guys do the work. But land trusts do come up. I mean, in my experience, I tell people that as far as the due on sale clause is concerned, it's not something that they need to be worried about if they're transferring into a land trust or an LLC because lenders typically won't accelerate.
It's
but
true.
I do see people who buy at auction like to use land trust because they can just create the trust right then and there and then take title in it. Because many of them typically don't have their LLC set up or they haven't created the series LLC so they can just create the sell agreement on the spot. And that is a common way for an auction investor many times to acquire real estate to keep it out of their name. And so I was just wondering if they didn't do that or, you know, they're using land trust, does it create an issue on your side?
The key for us is always the documentation of the authority part. So we're going to need to be able to see most of the parties in Texas, you know, they'll take title and then we're dealing with them on the sales side or they're going out to get a loan. And that's where we need to be able to see any trust agreements to make sure that we've got the right parties that we're working with.
So if you looked at a land trust, for instance, and it had on there Clint Coons is trustee because the client wanted to set it up where they wanted to use myself as a nominee trustee.
Right.
And then I resigned and I appointed Karen as the trustee because she's also the beneficiary, but that doesn't show up on title. Is that going to create an issue for you?
Not as long as you've papered it properly. And that's something we see people that paper it really well and they have years and years of records. And that's always kind of our best example. Sometimes we see people not documented at all. And it is really hard to retroactively go back and fill those gaps. Because it just becomes something that as an underwriter, you look at and you're saying, well, they didn't really have any of the paperwork. And so now it looks different going backwards than it would as if you'd taken care of it at each step.
Wow. You know, that's really interesting you say that because I've run into a lot of title companies before when it comes to the land trust. They just wash their hands of it. They don't even want to listen. They don't even understand it. And they kill the deal. And clients are forced to go to a different title company to work with them. And I've never quite been able to figure it out why they're adverse to that trust.
You know, it depends on where the information is going to. So sometimes you'll have a closing team that may not understand the issues, and so they don't know what questions to ask of their underwriter or to pose to me. Sometimes it's an underwriter decision. So Texas National Title is multi-underwriter. I have 5 different underwriters, and if one of them doesn't like a transaction, then I shop the other 4. And that's a huge thing for us to be able to get some of those deals closed, because sometimes underwriters will pick a position that they don't like a certain type of transaction. And if you only have that one line that you can write on, it's really challenging to get transactions closed. We probably shop our 5 underwriters weekly with different deals because they each have different risk tolerance levels.
How common is that for a title company to have 5 different underwriters?
You know, previously in another company I worked for years ago, we only had 3 and we had to write 95% of it on 1. And so that was a really restrictive environment for us. It's common to have many when you're an independent agent like we are. But if you're a wholly owned company, then generally you don't get to have many options.
So if somebody was coming to a title company then and they're a real estate investor, are there any questions you think they should ask to make sure that that title company truly understands the real estate investor mindset and the strategies they're going to be using? Any keywords?
You know, I think it's important to ask about how many underwriters you have, because you don't want to put all your eggs in one basket and then have that underwriter change their mind on what they will or will not accept for risk. I think it's really important that the closing team that they're working with understand the model, particularly if it's a fix and flip, if it's somebody that's going to acquire and sell in the same day because they're wholesaling it. All of those concepts are very far outside of the regular residential market, and you can't fit a square peg in a round hole necessarily. So they want to make sure that the person that they're working with understands and has done these transactions before. And thankfully we do a lot.
Wow. That's awesome, because it sounds to me, what Texas National Title is, it's the real estate investor's title company, because of just the words you use. You talked about wholesaling, fix and flip. I've dealt with so many title companies before, and if you threw those words out, they would have to go Google them to figure out what it is.
Well, flip used to be a bad word back a couple of years ago, and it's been hard and a challenge to get people away from the negative connotation into it's just a business model. And getting people to understand that has been something that thankfully our guys have adopted really well.
Wow. Well, that's great. I know I've taken a lot of your time. You have other things to do today, but if someone wanted to get a hold of you and to reach out to you, how would they go about doing that?
So my email address is Latra, which is LATRA @texasnationaltitle.com. And our website is www.texasnationaltitle.com.
Great. All right, guys. So if you want to reach out to Latra, you can see the information in the show notes. You can click on that and be immediately connected to her via email, or you can go to the website. I just wanted, Latra, thank you for coming on today. I know this was powerful information. I've got a lot to digest, and I'm going to go back and re-listen to this, because you taught me a few things that I hadn't known when it comes to title insurance, and I'm sure going to incorporate it into my events going forwards to make sure we're always giving the most accurate information. So with that, is there any parting comments you have?
I don't think so. Thank you for your time.
All right. Thank you very much. Take care.
Thank you for listening to today's podcast. Show notes for links to everything mentioned in this episode can be found on our website at andersonadvisors.com/podcast. Be sure you subscribe to our podcast. And if you are already a subscriber, please provide us a review of what you thought of this episode.